Hi, I'm Alex Cox.
And I'm Maddie Cox.
This is a queer podcast about gender, our minds, and all sorts of transitions.
Welcome to Two-Headed Girl.
You scheduled top surgery.
I did.
Quick refresher, what is top surgery?
Top surgery is the removing of the breasts in various ways.
It's surgery. What does various ways mean?
It means there's different ways to get rid of them titties.
I mean, yes, but it is a surgical procedure.
Surgery to remove the excess breast tissue on your chest to give you your chest a masculine look.
How long have you wanted to do this now?
2 years.
Man.
Well, actually, funny enough, it'll be 2 years in March since I started looking into top surgeons, and that is when my top surgery is scheduled.
First of all, I don't want people to think that we are advocating for top surgery or any type of particular surgery of any kind,
you
really.
You don't have to have surgery to be trans, and you don't have to be on testosterone to be trans or estrogen.
It's just a fairly common thing for a lot of transmasculine folks to do, including yourself. So I think it's really important that we talk about it and kind of document the whole process, just how we documented you coming out and how we dealt with that as a couple and how we explored our own genders together.
Exactly. And now it's going to be an exploration of my chest together.
I'm familiar with it already. Anyway. There are so many things that we could start with. How do you find this type of surgeon? Because essentially, it's a plastic surgeon. And I feel like a lot of people like to shy away from that term because we, for some reason, as a society, see plastic surgery as vain or unnecessary when, like, the majority of plastic, quote, plastic surgeons, even that's like a misnomer, heal skin conditions and stuff like that. And what used to be called a sex change is now called gender affirmation surgery because you getting most of your chest fat removed has nothing to do with your genitals.
That is very true. But it has to do with making me more masculine in mm-hmm. appearance.
So how did you go about finding your doctor?
So I can only speak for the U.S. because I know it's a really different process in the U.K. And I only know that because I did research and I've watched videos on YouTube. So there is actually like a database of top surgeons in the U.S. There's a website where you go and it'll list all the top surgeons in your state or if there are any in your state. And then you can break it down even farther to see if they accept your insurance or...
They never will.
Very few do.
That's not true.
Or if they accept, like, care credit and stuff like that.
What's care credit?
A loan. You take out a line of credit specifically for top surgery.
So is this just for queer and trans folks?
No, it's for any medical procedures. But it can be used for a lot of people use it to help pay for gender affirming surgeries.
Who puts together this database?
It looks like it's just like a trans community. I'm assuming it's a bunch of trans people that have been through the surgeries, or it's not a bunch of medical professionals, but it's medical professionals working with trans clients or that are well versed in trans surgeries.
Are there any trans doctors who do gender affirmation surgeries?
Not that I'm aware of.
That sucks.
I mean...
There has to be, right? Come on.
Out of all the ones I've looked at in the U.S. that are on that specific source, and we can link it in the show notes, I have not seen any.
But
from
that
specific source.
And that doesn't include anyone who does surgeries for trans women, though, right?
No, I mean, it should, because it some are just listed as gender affirmation surgeries, not FTM top surgeries. Like, some surgeons do all or both or multiple.
Can you just take me through the process of what it was like scheduling your surgery? Because there's a number of things you have to do to just prepare for, you know, booking it.
When I first considered top surgery or thought about getting it, I researched a bunch of surgeons. One that I had heard of because he's pretty popular, Dr. Garamone in Florida. He's, as far as I'm aware, the most popular and well-known top surgeon in the United States. And then I started researching surgeons closer to home, specifically just because I was curious. Like, I know you have family in Florida and we could fly there, but like, I was curious to find surgeons closer to home. And then I started researching like their results.
I don't know if folks will know what you mean by results, like how people's chests look afterwards.
Yeah. So like how many satisfied...
Satisfied customers.
Exactly.
That's what they are. I was a satisfied customer when I got my hand tumor removed.
That's true. Yeah.
Because we live, again, in a country where healthcare is very much a part of our capitalist process.
Unfortunately. After I did that, I narrowed down surgeons. So I was looking at like four of them, one in Ohio, one in Wisconsin, one in Michigan, and then one in Florida. And I honestly looked at results, prices, and then like the feedback and like community surrounding the surgeons, which I know you sort of find problematic, but I think there's like a community around top surgeons, like people that have gone there and share results and like recommend the surgeon. There's like Facebook groups and web pages and stuff. And I find the resources helpful. I find like the sense of like helping one another out is really great. I know a lot of people in the Facebook group where I am a part of for the top surgeon I'm going to are helpful to each other about surgery tips, aftercare tips, and like recovery, even for people who haven't seen that surgeon. So it's a community of resources, which is why I like it.
The only reason that I was kind of turned off by these types of groups is it felt almost like fan clubs for a lot of them. And I saw them, you know, some folks trashing other surgeons. And it just, I don't know, it gave me an icky feeling.
That's definitely not how it is, though.
You're right. The majority of it is not like that at all. But on the side, I was doing my own research of top surgeons, and because, you know, I mean, if you think about how much time I spend on WebMD for things that have nothing to do with any sort of physical affliction I have, like, of course, I'm going to spend hours and hours researching, like, just every aspect of what this is going to be like for you. All right, so you eventually found your top surgeon who's in Michigan. What made you go with him other than distance? And I know you say that you liked the results, but were there any other factors? Like,
I mean, price.
Yeah, I know. And that was something I worried about, too, was that you might be rushing into things to like get the cheapest surgery, which unfortunately a lot of people have to do, and it sucks. But there are some surgeons out there who are cheaper just because of location, and there's so many factors. We are just talking about you right now. So for you, other than okay, price, location, the results, what for you constitutes good results, I guess?
Well, one of the things they recommend on like top surgeons' websites is looking at people's results like not right after they're healing from surgery, but like a year out. you know, or yeah. like a couple years out to see how your chest will settle after you've had surgery. Mm-hmm. And also like bedside manner and community. The doctor I've chosen, people like rave about his bedside manner and how helpful he is and like how his nurses don't misgender. Like sometimes the surgeon is really great, but the person's hospital experience is really bad, especially if they mm-hmm. still have their old name and gender on their documentation. And that just being in the hospital is stressful, let alone like constantly getting misgendered and being there for gender affirmation surgery and still getting misgendered.
Like, that is fucking wild.
And
to
that
me.
Is something that literally no one has complained about. Like,
I don't understand. I mean, I understand slip ups. They suck. They don't. Like, that's not to say it's not completely reasonable to be upset when you're being misgendered in the hospital. But if you look at the patient's chart, see why they're here, and most hospitals, even fairly conservative, even the ones that I've been to, ask what my preferred name is because my name is Alexandra, right? And they're like, do you, Alex, Allie, and I just
they'll
think
put, yeah, they'll put Alex on your medical
it's
bracelet.
It's so strange to me.
There's that part in the Skyler episode of Queer Eye where he says, I was in bed, had my scars and my chest clearly flat and bandaged and like my full beard, and I was still constantly getting misnamed and misgendered. And like for him to be going through that in the hospital, like that's something I can't even imagine. And like you're already vulnerable and healing mm-hmm. and miserable and like oof. So I mean, yes, the bedside manner, big contributing factor.
I think it's funny that you and I have very different approaches to how we choose doctors, because I want some, not that I...
You want the doctor that's an asshole.
I don't want the doctor who's an asshole, but I don't care if my doctor is an asshole as long as they're getting good results. I had at one time a very nice dentist. Lovely guy, was horrible. like I would go and I don't even remember what it was. Like, he missed a cavity. I've only ever had one cavity in my life.
Brag it up.
Humble brag. Only one cavity. I'm sorry that I keep talking about my hand surgery. It was just such a
no. That's
really
a good.
Big...
It's a big surgery, and it's also a good comparative thing, hospital wise and mm-hmm. like surgeon wise. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I went to a lot of different surgeons. Visited a lot of facilities that had different physical therapy stuff. I say a lot, but it was like three or four because I was really lucky to find a guy who was an asshole. He was an asshole, did not have a good bedside manner. However, I know that I need to be an advocate for myself in that situation because doctors are not taught bedside manner typically in med school, as we know from our friends who are now doctors. Oh, that's so weird.
I was going to say from House and Grey's Anatomy, but also...
I mean, also from real life.
Also from real life.
But because I just knew all of the questions that I wanted to ask, he gave short answers, but I'd be like, I don't understand that. Please explain it like I'm a 5-year-old. And it's like, I don't know. It is frustrating, sure, that you need to keep advocating for yourself. But everything I'd heard was like, yes, this guy gets results. He doesn't miss anything.
Which had happened with your previous doctor.
Yep, which is why I got so into this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to get consults from different doctors. I had a consult from one surgeon who basically, I did not like his response and ultimately decided not to go with that doctor. Not because of his response, but like that was definitely a negative contributing factor, is he told me what kind of top surgery I would get, like straight up. He was like, this is a surgery you're getting. This is how much money it is. This is how it would be. He didn't ask my opinion or what I felt or what I thought. Whereas I feel like this this is a surgery where like a doctor should ask you how you feel and what you think and like obviously give their professional opinion, but this is not like a you're doing this because you need to, I say so kind of thing.
Yeah, let's get into that because there are a variety of surgeries. It's, I mean, even again with my tiny tumor, there were not a ton of options, but he was like, this is how I typically do it. This is, you know, you're going to have an incision this far in. Sometimes people go around the back. I find that it's ineffective because blah, blah, blah. I've tried to like block everything out now that because I don't need to.
Because you don't need to know the information about how they sliced open your hand?
Yeah, I don't. I don't need to know. I just know that the tumor's gone and I'm happy about it.
They were so worried about your scar. It's going to be a whole inch. It's going to be terrible. And it's like the most unnoticeable, coolest scar ever. I love it.
It's a little baby. It's a little baby with a
little Frankenfinger.
Little Frankenfinger. All other plastic surgeries, some people would call them elective. And, you know, it's your choice. It is your body. You are the expert on your body. And I completely understand why you wouldn't want to go with somebody, because that's not even bedside manner. That is how he's going to go about the procedure.
Right. I feel like that is super ego. Like that, I just felt like it was a ego boost. Like I push you out of the way, ego in the room. This is what I do. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That to me didn't feel like bedside manner. I totally understood where you were coming from, because this is your body. This is your chest. This is something you are going to live with for the rest of your life. And
happily. Hopefully. Well, you would want it to be happily.
Well, that's what I mean. You want as much agency. That's what this is all about, right? Having
yes.
agency over your body.
Yeah.
And to have especially a man coming in and saying, we are going to chop up your boobs this way without explaining why, or, you know, not explaining the reason that your body type should have this kind of surgery, I find that gross. And looking into doctors on my own, I saw that as well. And we haven't talked about this yet. What are the different types of surgeries? I did not know that there was more than one type of top surgery
There's
until a
lot.
Few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually don't know how
I know double incision, keyhole, periareolar, T-anchor, and I believe there's one more. It's like minimal scarring or something. It's like a form of double incision, but smaller. So most people get double incision, which is where the surgeon cuts underneath the breast line, like along the pectoral, where your pectoral muscles would be, and removes the breast tissue, and you end up with two horizontal scars where your pec muscles would be, and they put nipple grafts in a place that would be where naturally masculine nipples would lie. And that's the most common, because it is for all body types. Like, it doesn't matter what size your chest is. Mm. It could be double D, it could be A. And that is, like, you could get that surgery. So periareolar top surgery is also a lot like keyhole, where around your nipple, they cut a little incision, just, like, around the outside of the areola, hence areolar. And just liposuck the boob out. Liposuck that tissue out. And it's for chests. Keyhole and periareolar are for chests that are A or B. Usually can't be for chests that are any bigger, just because the elasticity of the like breast tissue and the skin would make it so that the chest would have extra skin. So you would have to mm-hmm. either get a revision or it just wouldn't yield good results, which can also happen even if you have a small chest, but you've been binding for, let's say, like years and years and years, and the skin elasticity of your boobs is not bouncy, is not good skin elasticity, then you have to, don't have to, but then they recommend you get DI because otherwise there will be extra tissue.
And that's why DI is the most common in general, right? Because
it yields the best results, yeah.
And my understanding, I think, was that so many people start binding so early and then they the best results are
from double incision. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Okay, cool. What did it feel like after getting that call and making your appointment?
Really good. Like, I had been waiting a really long time to schedule it, and so good. I was taken off guard because I made the call to schedule top surgery. Well, we did together.
We were going to record it.
Yeah, we did together. We were in bed on a Saturday morning, ready to call and record. And
hold up. That made it sound weird. We were in bed because there's a lot of blankets, and it is one of the best places to record because, like, there's pillows everywhere.
Oh, I didn't mean it dirty. I meant, like,
we were in bed.
No, I didn't say it like that. Yeah, we were fucking.
No. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Continue. I brought this upon myself.
We were all settled in the bedroom, ready to record about my top surgery call and scheduling it. And the office was closed and didn't call us back. So then Monday last week, I was walking in between dog walks, and I'm climbing up this walk up, these like four flights of stairs, and I got a call. And I recognize the number. I answer the phone, like, right there on the spot as I'm trying to, like, leash up a dog. I was scheduling my top surgery. And it was stressful and very exciting. And I was super happy afterwards and texted you right away.
What was, you know, the receptionist like? Or I really have no concept of what this initial call is, because even online folks don't really talk about it.
The first thing you have to do is email pictures of your chest. If you don't get an in-person consult, what you do then is email pictures of your chest, and then the nurse or receptionist or nurse practitioner gives the pictures to the doctor, and then you and the doctor have an email dialogue about your chest and what surgery you think is best and what you agree on. Once you decide you're ready, or you have the funds, or you have know what time and when, or you have no more family tragedies or hand tumors, you can call and schedule top surgery. So I had already done an email consult with the doctor, so I knew all of the like big questions, like what surgery and where and when and all of the, like the pre-op and all of that was already discussed and out of the way. So for me, the questions were, when are you looking to schedule it? Do you have someone that can come with you? What are the medications you're on? How much do you weigh? Then I paid. And I gave my name and my email address so that the receptionist could look at our other consult emails. Because I had, back in May, I had gotten a consultation from this doctor that I wanted and everything went well. So my call was very, like, simplistic. There were no, like, questions about what type of surgery and where do you want your nipples resized and like all of this different stuff. Like none of that was on the phone call.
Why didn't you have me take the pictures of your chest? You took them yourself, yeah?
I guess I was self-conscious and I kind of did it impulsively.
Oh.
Because a consult isn't a yes, I'm scheduling surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still surgeon shopping when I got my consult.
No, I'm giggling because that's a good thing. And I almost wish that other people sort of did the same thing. Maybe I'm getting the wrong impression from people online, but doesn't it seem like, and maybe this is because some consultations cost money.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All the email consults I've done have been free.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm that's surprising. I don't like that it's surprising, but it is. It seems like people go with not even necessarily who's closest or who's cheapest. It's just like, yeah, I like these results. All right, good to go.
The first surgeon they see sometimes, I feel like.
Yeah. Which I understand. Or rather,
if your dysphoria is crippling and like you make that effort to like reach out and have a consult, then you want to get it done as quickly as possible. I feel like I had the resources and not the leisure and the time to like think it over.
And you were in therapy and dealing with your dysphoria in different ways as well.
Yeah. I didn't want to make a rash decision. I also wanted to make sure I was in a good place mentally, bipolar-wise, like stable before I remove a part of my body.
Yeah, you're smart and responsible.
Well, it was only at the urging of you that I get a gender therapist. So I was like, I'm already in regular therapy. This is fine. And then I went in gender therapy and I was like, oh, this is, yes, this is something I needed. Thank you for listening to this episode of Two-Headed Girl. We know this is a difficult time for everyone, especially trans people who have had to postpone surgeries and have little or no access to hormones. If you're in need of emotional or financial support, please check out the resources listed in the show notes. If you're interested in hearing more, head on over to twoheadedgirl.fm or anywhere you find your podcasts, including our favorite app, Overcast, created by Marco Arment. Thank you again, take care of yourselves, and wash your damn hands.
You know what? Honestly, I could be wrong because I was just like, ah, God, there's so many boobs on this screen right now.